Welcome to Thoughts from Home, your conservation podcast from the National Conservation Training Center. We're located along the Potomac River in historic Shepherdstown, West Virginia, and are home to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Thoughts from Home podcast series. I'm Cecilia Melton. I'm a course leader here at NCTC. In this episode, we're talking with Mark Madison, who is a historian for the Fish and Wildlife Service. Mark is going to talk to us about the archives, which are hosted here at NCTC. Welcome, Mark. Mark, for our listeners that have never heard about the archives, could you give us a little introduction, maybe also tell us about your role in the archives?
Absolutely, and thanks for inviting me here, Cecilia. Appreciate it. So, as you mentioned, I'm the historian for the whole agency, for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and we have the Fish and Wildlife Service Museum and Archives out here at the National Conservation Training Center, and that archives holds about 500,000 items, the majority of which are papers and books, of course, like any other archive, but it's a little different than most archives. We have about 100,000 photos, about 10,000 films, and best of all, we have all sorts of artifacts. We have tools of the trade, we have endangered species, we have all sorts of oddball things, ranging from a polar bear to Rachel Carson's magnifying glass.
So I know from all those very interesting things, you have something for everybody. But I would like to know if you can tell us a little bit about what are some of the most valuable things that you have in the archives, maybe from a history point of view, or it could be a monetary value.
I'll give you both.
Okay.
I don't want to choose. Yes, and. So from a historical value, recently we've got all the books, some letters, some family photos, diplomas, all sorts of stuff from Rachel Carson's home. So she lived in Silver Spring, Maryland, not far from here. And all these artifacts were owned by the Rachel Carson Council. And about 8 years ago, the council donated them all to NCTC. And that's been great, because we had all of Rachel Carson's stuff when she worked for the agency for 16 years, like her magnifying glass, and now we have her personal books. So we can see what Rachel Carson was reading, we can see what type of notes she took, what influenced her. We have family photos. Many people don't know this. Rachel Carson was a jock. She was a field hockey player in college and so on.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of new things that are popping out from this archive. So historically, that's really valuable. And we've had a number of researchers come from all over the country to examine those. Monetarily, we have a gift that was given to President George W. Bush by the Emir of Qatar, a Middle Eastern kingdom. And it's a bejeweled dagger. It almost looks like it's out of a movie. It has diamonds, emeralds, rubies, and this long stainless steel dagger in it. But the hilt was made out of elephant ivory. So if presidential gifts have illegal wildlife parts in them, they often come to our museum or the wildlife repository. So because it's made of gold and diamonds and jewels, it's probably monetarily easily the most valuable thing we have.
And that is a really cool artifact. I've been lucky enough to see it. Yeah.
Cool.
And I really have to ask this. What's one of the most strangest things that you can find in the archives?
That's harder. Probably one of the strangest things we have is a bear tattoo kit. So people don't normally think of tattooing bears. They have a lot of fur. They don't have a lot of skin to tattoo. But we tattooed in the past bear lips to identify them, so we don't count the same bear twice. So we have this tattoo kit in an old wooden case. And it has ink sprayed all over it, because sometimes the bears wake up a little earlier than we want them to, in which case we drop the bear tattoo kit, we run to the truck and lock the doors. Yeah, reasonably so.
That's very interesting. Like the racehorses, how they tattoo them.
Yes, exactly.
So from all these artifacts and documents that you have, I know you can draw a lot of stories from them. What are some stories, and how do you share those stories with the public, not just with Fish and Wildlife Service employees, but with the public in general?
That's a really good question. That's really been our emphasis for the last 20 years. So we do a couple of different things. We have a website where we put a lot of our information called conservationhistory.org. We also have a publication that comes out every year called Conservation History. We're kind of stuck in names. They're all the same. And that's on the website. You can see the past issues up there. Around the campus, we have a museum and all sorts of historic displays. So the 3,000 or so students that come out here can see it. And then we give over 100 tours every year of the archive. So we really want to share all the stories we have.
And you have a lot to share. So also, I know you can use all this information as a teaching tool. Can you give us some example of how you can use that?
Sure. We bring all the new employees to the archives and museum and do kind of a show and tell. So the history sticks more than maybe a PowerPoint lecture. We also bring school groups out, scouts and so on. And we have an open house where we teach people about this. And we teach in most of the academies out here. So for example, if we taught in the National Wildlife Refuge Academy, we would explain how that began under Theodore Roosevelt, and now it's almost a billion acres that we steward for wildlife. And we can show how it evolved from one little island not far from Disney World to the Atlantic and the Pacific, and basically covering like a third of the nation.
I think it's very important that you have something that can be relevant to anybody, from fisheries person to a person that might be a bird person, and
everybody. We have something for everyone.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
When you get 500,000 items, you should have something for all our various divisions.
And another thing I would like to know if you can discuss is, from all this history that is very relevant to not just to our country, but for conservation around the planet, what are some thoughts and discussions that we can have, how we can use all this knowledge to move into conservation into the future?
You know, that's a really good question, and I'm actually working on a talk on that right now. You know, historians like to say those who don't learn from the past are condemned to repeat it, but that's not true. We make the same mistakes over and over again. So sometimes we look at past experiments, of which the refuge system is one, and marine national monuments, and we see what works and what doesn't. Or another good example is, number one environmental issue now is climate change. And we had an example where the middle third of the U.S. experienced climate change. It was called the Dust Bowl in the 1930s. And our agency did a lot to try to combat it. Forest Service, Park Service, a lot of federal intervention happened. And we can see, you know, did planting trees, did changing land use practices, did mobilizing federal conservation agencies help mitigate climate change, a localized climate change in the 30s, what worked, what didn't, as we try to combat it today. So we try to take past experiences and draw some lessons from them, and at least not make the same mistakes.
Yes. Thank you, Mark. Any other remarks that you would like to, people that have maybe never visited the archives, or people that are coming to NCTC that they should know or look for?
Yeah, well, first of all, we hope everybody that comes to NCTC visits the museum. It's right where you check in. You can't miss it. It's the center of campus. And then we put history every other place. History's on the walls. It's in the dorms where they stay. It's in the dining hall. It's in the social center. We like to joke, we crammed history everywhere but the restrooms, and we're working on that. So we hope they'll come and visit us. We have tours we offer in the evenings every month, and then we have public lectures where they can come out and see the museum and see some of our displays. So we really want people to come out. We just had the 50th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act. So we have a whole bunch of displays, banners on the light posts showing endangered species. We have in the museum a passenger pigeon. We're going to have a California condor in there. We have a polar bear. So people can see up close and personally what these endangered species look like and why they're so important to us, why we want to preserve them.
Thank you so much, Mark, for joining us today and sharing all this really fascinating information. So again, if you would like to know a little more about history and the Fish and Wildlife Service, visit conservationhistory.org and find more information there. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Thought from Home.
Thank you, Cecilia.
Thank you for listening to the National Conservation Training Center podcast series. If you have feedback, thoughts, or stories you'd like to share, contact us at nctc_podcast@fws.gov.